Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。全然見えない。
What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker. I'm coming to you from the Brick House here in Vice HQ. You already know what it is. I have Danielle Rianda with me. I have Patrick Klepek with me. It is December. We are almost out of 2016.
Yes.
We can do it. Let's get it.
What? Let's so we can go. Just find a year that can try and top it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we get through this, we can get through it. We can do it. We can do it.
We can work through it.
We can work through it together.
2017, I like the way it sounds. It sounds futuristic. It sounds way more futuristic than 2016.
It's an odd number.
You know, odd numbers help, I think, a little bit.
2017, you can't kill Prince twice.
You can't. Prince, Bowie, Leonard Cohen, they're coming for
Muhammad
the greats.
Ali.
Muhammad Ali.
Oh.
This year.
Oh.
Whew.
Yep.
This is not our year-end wrap-up, but like...
it's our deaths of celebrities wrap-up.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh. How's everybody doing?
Good.
You doing all right?
Good.
Get that out of the system. Let's get that energy back in. No,
you're pumped.
Get it back in.
No,
I got it back in. It's good.
All right, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Let me just be honest. The Game Awards, the Keelys were last night.
The Keelys.
and that is a show that is exhausting, partially due to its own design, but also partially just due to what the format needs to be.
It's so marketing heavy.
Yeah. So for people who don't watch these sorts of things, it's Jeff Keighley, who has been in the industry for 15 years now, like
longer than that. Yeah,
longer than that. Definitely, he's an institution, as it were. And for a long time, he held these big video game awards that were either aired on Spike TV. Were they on G4 ever?
No, it was always Spike TV.
Always Spike. Was Spike something else before it was Spike? I feel like it was.
It
I forget what
been.
It was. But whatever.
The Man Network.
It was the Man Network.
Something like that, yeah.
You could watch Mansers on
Man.
Spike TV.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it was this really, like, blown out, celebrity-studded tons of musical performances. And, like, it felt like it had to try to reach a really, really broad audience. And so people didn't like it because it was so – it was so, like, mainstream, and it didn't really feel like it reflected the culture of games. And then, you know, in the last couple of years, last few years, he's moved it, I don't think Spike is around anymore even, or...
I have no idea.
Spike is around, and also, to clarify, it used to be TNN, the Nashville Network.
Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. The
it
Nashville
wasn't the
Network.
It wasn't the Manville Network.
No,
it was
not.
Nashville.
It was the Nashville Network.
All right,
there's lots
cool.
of country music.
Yeah.
That must have sucked if you were, like, deep into the Nashville Network to Spike.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to see some Kenny Chesney, and I'm getting Mansers. That's not what I want. So now Keighley has spun it off to be an independent thing. It's not on any broadcast network. It's just on the internet. It's scaled down in some ways, but it still has the sort of like gloss and grandeur of a big award show, or it wants to have that. It aspires to that sort of thing. And the thing is, anytime you want to do something that big, that costs a lot of money. And so like the way that you have to do that is you have to first make sure that you can afford to rent out that place.
Yeah.
And to do that, you need advertising dollars. And to do that, you have to convince your advertiser that you're going to have a big audience. And to do that, you have to start making it a thing that people will actually watch. And so it shifts from being this, like, celebration of games, which is what is in Jeff Keighley's heart of hearts, I believe truly
wants.
He wants to celebrate
yeah.
games, to this other thing, which is, like, a marketing blitz.
Yeah.
The only way you get people to watch through for 3 hours is like, oh, at the end there's going to be a new Mass Effect, you know, trailer.
Right, right.
Or like there's going to be the Death Stranding stuff with Hideo Kojima. And I think that stuff is cool, but like you need to – that's how you get people to watch. And then once you have people watching, that's how you slip in that little bit of extra –
humanity.
Well, first like a little bit of humanity, yeah, and then advertising, right? Like it's – so it's that mix of like you need trailers to get people to watch,
yeah,
and you need people to watch so that you can sell ads, and you need ads so that you can rent the space. And then finally you can celebrate games a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the thing. And so, like, on some level, I want to be like, if you're going to go big, this is what it's going to look like. And that's my beef with trying to say that this is the format with which you want to, quote unquote, celebrate games.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like it's diametrically opposed. Like, there was that Zelda trailer that I thought was actually really good.
Yeah.
That was, like, really calm. Was it Trinan and Reggie? Who were no? Was it Trinan and...
It was Bill Trinan and Nate.
No, I don't know who. Yeah. Who's the other person?
Nate from the Treehouse.
Oh, Treehouse Nate.
Shout out to Treehouse Nate.
That's my rap name.
Playing the game.
Treehouse, yeah. Nate, a.k.a. P-Clep.
There you go, P-Clep.
A.k.a. Tricky Scoops.
A.k.a. Tricky Scoops, right, exactly.
Check out my bot.
That's true, there's a bot. We'll get to your bot.
Bot.
So, like, that moment was really chill. Like, they were playing The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and it was just like... this sudden shift change to where they were like quiet and on a couch and
was
like
nice.
playing. They were playing Zelda together. They're having friends.
Bros were playing a game on the couch.
And it was yeah. The thing that I kind of finally explained it to somebody who was like, "Why are you so exhausted by all of this?" And what I said was like, "Imagine that Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild is the coolest game next year, like by far. Imagine it changes the world. Like imagine everybody loves it
last night. Yeah,
you know, world leaders are coming together on it, and they're like, you know what, Breath of the Wild. Am I right? We'll figure out this trade stuff. No more registry. Just come on in. Like Breath of the Wild has
changed.
Do you
like Breath of the Wild? Come into our country."
Exactly. Yeah. The scales have fallen from my eyes.
America
thank you.
Of the Wild is perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In that world, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild gets 30 seconds at the next Game Awards. Because it's not what's hot and new and next. It's what already happened. And so the emphasis has to be on the next thing and not on the thing you want to celebrate. Which is a shame because when they actually give it that room, things like the That Dragon Cancer acceptance speech
yes.
feel really heartfelt and do feel like a real celebration of what's happened. It's just that's like... literally jammed between like a hyper dubstep action game trailer and literally a man dressed as a Razor robot, like a yeah. chic Razor but a robot.
And you're saying hyper dubstep, and let's be clear, it was like Linkin Park.
That was
night.
There was Linkin Park.
Was like,
there was
it
Linkin
was like
Park.
Linkin Park and old Smashing Pumpkins.
There was old Smashing Pumpkins that did happen
night.
Last
it was
night.
It was pretty great. It was pretty amazing. But yeah, there's actually a moment. So that Dragon Cancer speech. It was Ryan Greene who was the creative director, I think, at Numinous Games. They made that Dragon Cancer, which is a game about their young son who died of cancer. It's a very, you know, sort of touching game. And he gave this, like, teary-eyed but still very clear and very strong and very brave speech. And then Jeff Keighley, you know, hard cut to Jeff Keighley, and he's like, well, that's why we do the show. And then it was, like, the Razor robot, I think,
wow.
again.
Wah,
and
wah, wah,
so
wah,
it was,
wah.
Like, there's a right. lot, yeah, there's just a lot of shifting there emotionally, and I could totally see the exhaustion sort of happening from that.
I just wonder who all that other stuff is for, right? Like the rapping, like, the making it in that fashion. Like, who, like... I think people watch that show for the trailers, and they incidentally
it's
watch
for me.
Everything else.
The Run the Jewel and the Ray Shrum, that's for me. Like, are you kidding me? My whole Twitter feed was like, what is Black Beatles? My dude, it is number one on the Billboard. The Mannequin Challenge is like, the hugest thing. It has been for months. Like, it's actually to the point now where they started it by being like, all right, everybody freeze in your seats. And I was like, that's corny. That's played out. That's how big it got, is that, like, it got played out.
Yeah.
I follow a lot
but
of white
all
people.
All your white
on
people
Twitter.
On Twitter.
All my white people
they
on
didn't
Twitter.
Know.
And then all the white people on Twitter who I don't follow were like, yo, can I get a follow though? Like, no. The point of me saying that wasn't I want to follow more white dudes on Twitter who I don't know. I follow 1,700 people on Twitter. It's a lot of people. Anyway.
That's a lot.
Anyway.
Wait, you follow 1,700 people?
Yeah, dog. Don't
doing?
Fucking talk to me about being in a bubble. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I am not.
That is not a bubble.
No,
that
I'm not in an echo chamber.
You can't even read that timeline. That's impossible.
It's you dive in. You let it wash over you, Patrick.
Ugh.
You let it, like, it consumes you, and then you come up for breath, and then you just kind of go back in, and you get all these nice – it's like a different sort of experience. Like, for a long time, Twitter was a thing that I did – Yeah. I lived on Twitter.
Yeah.
Now it's like I visit it for like a quick.
You visit for your dives.
Yeah.
You take a dive. It's like Abzu.
Yes, it's like
you just
like
you
the
go
reverse.
All the way in,
the
and world, then you go right back up.
The world is the ocean, and every now and then I have to go into Twitter to take a breath.
There it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's like in Finding Nemo. They take a breath when they go up. It's good.
We should talk about specific other things that happened though during yeah. the Game Awards. Like, what stood out for you as like big moments from that thing?
Patrick,
I'm trying to be. I want to be positive because I don't want to get weird about the Kojima stuff.
Say posy.
So, well, I don't know. So, what were the big? There was they showed Zelda. They showed
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding. Yeah. So let's set aside the weird honoring of Hideo Kojima saving a bunch of kids from a coal mine. Teary speech.
Yeah, a marriage proposal.
That
I
was,
think
that
is
was,
what it was intended.
That was well intentioned, yeah. but incredibly awkward and like 5 minutes too long. That trailer, I mean, I don't know what that game is, but I want to play that game.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always
been
the thing about
X-Files fan.
It's always been the thing about Kojima that even, I think, Austin, you and I are on opposite sides on this in the same way that we are on opposite sides of Dark Souls, is I think Metal Gear Solid 2 and 4 are trash, and 1 and 3 are amazing.
I don't think 3 is trash. I don't think 1 and 3 are trash. I think 1 is, like, brilliant. I think 1 is...
Yeah, my preference is 1 and 3 versus 2 and 4 for, like, I think reasons that are fairly yes. obvious in how they do storytelling.
Totally.
But even when I don't like what the dude's up to, you know, quiet nonsense and all things like that, he yep. makes just striking choices in all he does. And so even when I'm critical of the work he does, I'm, like, exceptionally happy he's out there doing it. And he is, like... one of the few people that gets handed just infinite piles of money to do
yeah.
big, like Death Stranding should
big,
be a small
big,
indie
weird.
Game, not you know yeah. not what it is, and
not Mads Mikkelsen and Guillermo
crying
del Toro.
Black tears. Yeah.
yeah, yeah, and it's just I don't know what that game is. It'll probably be some open world stealth action game, probably. Mm-hmm. But goddamn, does that world already like I want to go inhabit it immediately.
Yep. Do you think they're just using the Fox engine again? They're just going to put a new name on it? Because that looked a lot like Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah. And it
totally.
It also seems like there is a lot of horror imagery in yeah. this. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if... it's not going to be a horror game, but I'm not going to be surprised if there is some leveraging of ideas and sort of design iconography from what they were going to do with Silent Hills brought sure. into Death's Stranding, because it just it's very striking in the way that they're like sort of the grotesque art that they're using.
Yeah,
totally. And like one of the things that Kojima games often do is that like shift to a slightly different genre for a little bit, where like, oh, you know, kind of variations on the turret sequence, so to speak, where it's like, oh, this is a motorcycle chase scene now, or oh, you're a weird ghost samurai in 3, and like that's already there's room for like, oh, there's going to be a weird horror segment here now. Like things are going to get really dark for the next hour and a half. That could be really cool. We'll see.
Totally.
You know, we'll see. And also Mads Mikkelsen is going to be.
Yes. I was very excited about that.
Mads is good.
Big fan.
Shout outs to Hannibal season 1, which is super good.
Oh, Hannibal, the whole thing is super good.
Somehow I have not seen
good.
That series. And I know that people
Hannibal.
Get angry at me for not.
You should watch
it's
Hannibal.
A, it sounds like a series made for me.
Thing.
I think it loses its way a little bit.
But it
really
finds
like,
its way again.
Yeah, the end.
It does.
There's a moment in season 3 where Lawrence Fishburne decides to make the whole season good.
Yep.
It's like the whole season is kind of bad, and then Lawrence Fishburne puts a boy through some glass, and then like, and then it's good again. And then like the whole thing kind of gets itself back on track.
It's very avant-garde and goes up its own ass a little bit in the beginning of season 3. But it does. Like I think it's all worth it. I think it's all worth it.
It wraps itself back around, intestines and all.
Yep.
There's also just my favorite thing about this entire Kojima del Toro like nonsense is this morning Guillermo del Toro, the great director of Pan's Labyrinth and the Hellboys and just Hellboy 2 or just was he? Did
Hellboy
he do both Hellboys?
2, I think.
No, he did both.
He did both. He did both. Okay. Great. Yeah.
Blade 2, that's the only two. By the way, super good.
Yes, it is.
Shockingly good.
Also really good, Wesley Snipes' Twitter account.
Wesley Snipes?
Hell yes.
Maybe the Twitter account of 2017.
There was one of 2017.
That's right. This is an aspirational award.
He had a tweet a couple of days ago that was just like a high-res photo of him doing, like, just staring at the camera with the caption, "Come at me, trolls." And it's just like, what are you doing, Wesley Snipes? You're evading your taxes, and then two, you're killing it on Twitter.
Yes. He's the best. So this morning, Guillermo del Toro was just like, fuck Konami.
Yep.
And I was like, whoa.
Yep.
Like, and
in
that
caps.
To me was,
he wrote it in caps.
In all caps. Yeah, I wasn't just shouting it. He shouted it on Twitter using the language of all caps, which we all know, of course, is
shout.
Shouting.
The shout caps.
And that was incredible because it like pulled back the veil a little bit and like it stopped doing the dance that Kojima and Keighley were doing at the event where it was like, we can't really say what we're talking about, but you know what we're talking about. You understand that Konami prevented us from actually giving him this award last year. Like, we're drawing this out because we like each other, but also because fuck you, Konami. So it was just so nice to hear someone just say
just
it.
Be real,
yeah,
like that.
Just be
yeah.
real. Just, and like, Del Toro can do it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what's his – that was one of those moments of just like, oh, right. Like, video game companies don't matter to the lives of most famous people. Like, right. They're outside of the gaming sphere, like, outside of our little bubble. Like, who? Like, yeah, I'm Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, who's this?
Fuck Konami. I can say that.
Yeah.
Come at me. I hope they don't go at him. I hope they don't send their spies at him.
Send their weird spies and their baby
– send their robot,
you know,
cyborg
like
ninjas.
Bizarre baby jars God. At him, you know?
So that was one big thing. I think the other big thing we're talking about is probably Nolan North's speech.
Yes.
Nolan North won for best performance.
He did.
Was that the
for Uncharted
award?
4 for, you know, reprising his role for the final time of Nathan Drake.
We'll see. He said final time. That is what
he said.
He
said it, not me.
But I am a little, like, curious if that will be the case, first of all.
Sure,
sure. You know, things
have a tendency to happen.
Things change. The world needs... The world needs money, apparently. But during his
acceptance speech,
thank you, he said, performance matters. And I was like, all right. Like, that's the hashtag. That is the SAG-AFTRA union, like, kind of...
Sort of rallying cry, I would call it.
Rallying
yeah.
cry, exactly. And then he said, the performance of every designer, every programmer, every hardworking and talented person who works at that office... That performance is so important, and their performance matters more than mine. And that's important in this day and age with all this talk going back and forth, because without their performance, my performance wouldn't matter. It wouldn't even exist. And I think there's a way to read that that feels like crossing the aisle and trying to find common ground during a really tough series of negotiations and back and forth. Like, the way I just read it, I think, delivered that version of the speech. But if you watch his video, it's a moment that feels like...
Shots fired a little bit.
It feels a little bit like shots fired. Or like if I'm the quote-unquote the game companies who are involved in this negotiation, those words are ammo now, right? And to be fit, to be completely clear, I absolutely think the performance of designers and producers and programmers and QA testers and everybody else who makes a game, everybody who touches a game, office assistants, you know, everything from
HR.
Everything in the fucking everybody, audio engineers, everybody helps produce a game who touches it. And everyone there should have good benefits and fair pay and all and, you know, a comfortable working environment and everything else. But the thing that we see again and again is people who oppose the SAG-AFTRA stuff doing this sort of like, well, if our situation is rough, then why aren't – you know, why should you be getting more money? Why should you be getting points on the – or, you know, kind of royalties on really high-selling games? Stuff like that. And my answer to that is like, yeah,
you should all get lots of money.
Should all be in on this to some – negotiation and organization is – would be, I think, in the long run, good for the industry. I think in the short term would be a little rough. But I don't know. It struck me way wrong.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm off base with that for last night, if either of you saw that bit?
Yeah, I thought it was super weird.
Yeah, it was definitely odd.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, the big one was just, like, using the performance matters hashtag
that was, yeah, that's what felt like shots fired more than anything else. Like, and he kind of had this look in his eye, like... Performance matters. It was like a weird, like, hey, you know who I'm talking to.
You know, that
well, and he prefaced it with saying he was going out on a limb, or like he was going to say, like, he sort of knew that he was about to say, like, that's what colors it in a way for me, that if we're trying to look at it in the most positive light, which is that he was trying to, you know, sort of reach across the aisle and also recognize that, hey, while the strike is going on, we're not necessarily saying that we're more important than the developers. When he says, like, oh, I'm going to kind of go out on a limb, like, it kind of feels like it colors it in a way that makes it shade, you know, like that he's throwing shade right. as opposed because, to doing yeah. the olive branch.
Right, because the olive branch wouldn't be going out on a limb.
No.
We'd right. be offering a limb, and right. that would be good. That would be fine and good, and instead.
Yeah.
In any case, those awards happened, and I think that these are better than they've been.
They're getting not incrementally ever, better, like, I feel like. Yeah. Each year, it's getting, like, a little bit less. Because the first year of the Game Awards, I remember being like, well, it's a little better than the VGS, but they had that weird, like, Battlefield Hardline song that was, like, super, like,
super tone deaf.
You know, yeah, exactly. And this was, like, there was nothing that was a gaffe on that level.
Yeah, I think...
If that makes sense.
I think that it was... So, earlier I joked a little bit about, like, oh, I follow a lot of white people on Twitter because I don't know who Run the Jewels or Ray Sharma are.
Sure.
The Run the Jewels song that they chose were, like, absolutely the ones that were maybe filled with a little too much...
The bag of dicks. You know, is a little much, but you know.
LP is going to be LP. And like,
yeah.
You know, I'm obviously a fan of Run the Jewels. Also understand any criticism of their songs. And importantly, like, this is an event that ended on a note from Jeff Kaplan. Was it Jeff Kaplan who was speaking?
It was actually Jeff Kaplan spoke for Game Direction. It was I'll find the name.
Okay.
And yeah.
Someone on the Overwatch team whose name I should just have on hand, and I'm frustrated I don't, ended by basically saying, like, we're really happy we won this award, like, and really grateful. We think that, like, we hope that our game celebrates diversity in times like these where that's something important.
Yeah, that was a really great moment.
So, like, I could understand the criticism that maybe the RTJ songs that they performed were not the best songs for an event that wanted to share, talk about the diversity of games and blah, blah, blah. So I want to be clear. I do think there's valid criticism to lay at the floor there. I also just think they were a little I think Run the Jewels was a little breathless last night. I don't think they had it in them. It wasn't the best performance those two dudes have ever done. Anyway, welcome to the only gaming podcast where you're going to hear, performance critique of Run the Jewels. Good luck. I hope their next album is good.
It's coming out soon.
Danielle's still looking for whoever.
I know. I'm sorry. I have it right here, and it's just loading.
It's
loading right here.
We have phones.
We're close
to having this on stream. I think next week we're gonna try to.
So you can see our faces.
One. Yeah, as you look at your phone.
God, it's being... Sorry, my phone's terrible.
And then the other big thing while you look this up is there was a Mass Effect Andromeda trailer.
Yeah, that looked cool.
It did. It looked cool. It was like the third time they said it's the first gameplay trailer ever.
Yep.
I feel like...
it's the first time they've shown, like you know... I think when they... Like,
the combat,
was a real gameplay, seeing UI is seeing...
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they were walking around a space station and you saw, like, quest markers and things like that made that.
I feel like when I was in that PS4 Pro event like 6 months ago or whatever, three months ago, they also called that the first ever gameplay.
Yeah,
show.
The marketing for this game has been bad, and I wonder if it is related to the fact that it has been like not so secretly delayed a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
Because the like I find like every time they try to get you excited, but I just feel like you know you can't like every 3 months being like the way they roll this stuff out. Like I just want to play the game at this point. Like I'm tired of looking at weird gameplay teases.
It's also been the thing that they've been talking about, it's been the thing that sort of leaked 2 years ago now. So it's one of those things of like I know what the concept is, so that isn't going to hit me, and so I need a little bit more. Which like obviously I can't blame them for leaks necessarily, but like. And I'm probably the majority of people were probably surprised when it's like, oh, you're going to go to the Andromeda Galaxy and colonize a new world. Like, okay, that's probably new for most people who don't keep up on this stuff. So maybe I shouldn't knock them for this at all. But, like, I wanted to see a little bit more in terms of characterization, a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, when the first Mass Effect trailer ever, like, came out, the thing that got me hyped was eyes and conversations.
Yeah.
Was like, and obviously this is a different time, but just like, wow, the Xbox 360 looks really powerful. Like, look at those eyes. Those look like people eyes. And then also...
It looks like an actual, like, filmic language.
Right.
Like, actually doing, you know, shot, reverse shot and things like that. And
totally.
It looked really nice and professional. Like,
and the voice work was really good and the dialogue was intriguing and, like, the world looked beautiful. And there's a little bit of that in this trailer at the front. And then it just, like, pivots into, like, oh, it's also an action game. It's an action RPG.
And there's a Mako / Nomad.
I'm pro Mako. So,
I am too.
Okay, sorry.
I like that Mako.
I know, Patrick, where you probably stand on the Mako.
It's bad. I mean, conceptually, it's interesting, but it's bad. Yeah. I think their problem. Is it because that game has so clearly been delayed, I think they're saving all of this characterization to the stuff we want until they know that the game is coming. Like, they've already telegraphed the game could be delayed till the summer. Like, you don't, when they did the N7 day and dropped their latest, like, first look tease, then it got delayed from early 2017 to spring 2017. And then on a financial call, Andrew Wilson of EA said, like, oh, we'll be happy to delay it if they need more time, which is basically saying they're going to delay it.
Why would that be fall 2017.
I bet it comes out in like May. Like, I think May, June is probably the time frame that I think that game gets slaughtered next fall if it actually makes it all the
way
there.
What's out next fall? Do we know?
Red Dead, theoretically.
Yeah, okay. I could see that. We'll see. I'm curious. I'm really curious about that game. The action seems really fast. Like way fast. Like, I think they were playing what would be similar to, like, the Vanguard class. Lots of, like dashing through people and, like, across the field and stuff like that.
Stuff that plays in a trailer.
Right, totally. Yeah. That's my class of choice. And so, okay. I'm very curious to see if it feels a little too fast for me. We'll see.
I always play Sentinel. It's okay.
Sentinel's cool. I love Sentinel. Listen, I like that game series a lot.
I think they've also said that the new one is, like, basically classless. Like, they've stripped that stuff away in the new one.
You just get to put points, I'm sure, into whatever.
Yeah, you, like, put points into things. And then if you, like, are really into the Vanguard-style abilities, you'll just get, like, specific stuff if you go far enough down
a
tree.
Right, that makes sense.
Whatever that path is,
yeah.
I found the name. Okay, so Overwatch. Sorry, that took me 10.5 hours.
We were just killing time with that Mass Effect conversation.
That's what it was. Killing time with Mass Effect. It was Blizzard's Ray Gresko, and I have the little quote. It was nice. This was sort of a good note, I think, to end the night on, and it was Overwatch winning Game of the Year. And he said, "We've been very happy with how the game has been received. We're also extremely proud that this game and the world that we're building has a message, and it's a message about heroism. It's a message about diversity. It's a message about a bright and positive and hopeful future."
Yeah.
So thank you, Ray Gresko.
Thank you,
Blizzard.
Ray.
And good, Overwatch team.
Yeah, totally. Well, like, there were actually a couple moments that night where I think it was actually when Jeff Kaplan came up to accept for Best Direction.
Yes.
He was like, "Hey, I'm Jeff Kaplan. I'm on the Overwatch team." And I was like, "Yeah, nice. Like,
yeah.
I'm glad that you weren't like, I made Overwatch."
Right.
which is like one of those things that does end up bugging me about the Kojima stuff. Like, we talk all day about, oh, Kojima is like the one guy maybe that auteur theory like applies to and blah, blah, blah. Like, that dude's been working with the same character designers for years.
Yeah.
He's working with the same editors for years. Like, it's like the Tarantino thing of like, well, like, actually a lot of what makes these people like distinct is the supporting staff around them who we call supporting staff because we have this like very, you know, great person theory of art and history in our heads, but it's way more complex than that.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is like why we tried our best to shout out all of the people who helped us do that 72-hour thing.
Yeah.
That like a billion, you don't see Eunice. Eunice isn't on stream. None of it would happen without Eunice.
We would be trying to tie our shoes.
Well, I don't know how. Eunice tells me, I'm like, Eunice, how do I, is it a bow? Is it I try to do like,
where do I put the little eyelet?
That's exactly, I know all the different possible knots that there are. I just don't know which one goes for shoes.
Exactly.
That's like,
we wouldn't be here without Tim producing our podcast today.
So I'm happy whenever game designers and developers and publishers get out there and say like, hey, like, shout outs to all of the people who actually make this happen.
Who make all the things work.
All right. I think we can move on from the Game Awards. There's another big event coming up, which is PSX, and we'll probably end up talking about that on Monday. What else is going on? Have you been up to anything?
Playing a lot of games.
What are you playing?
Playing a lot of Dishonored 2.
Nice. I got up to, I'm almost in the Clockwork Mansion.
You're in the outskirts.
I'm in the second part of the outskirts.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay.
I feel like this is my favorite. We should just have a moment in the podcast. It's like, Austin claims he's going to play more Dishonored.
I did.
How much closer has he gotten to the Clockwork Mansion, which really isn't that far into that stage?
I climbed a hill and the game crashed, okay? So I got from the... I did everything in the bottom zone. Like, so Danielle wrote a piece on the site this week.
Yes, I sure
did. About Dishonored 2 and...
Like, how it's making me 100%er again, basically. It's making me play through obsessively and look for every little thing. And I haven't done that since I was a teenager. But this game, like, puts me in that mindset of, like... These levels are so sort of richly designed. Yeah. There's so many secrets. There's so many ways of getting through them that I'm like, I need to know all the ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, like, finding those secrets, too, even when they're not, like, mechanical bonuses, can feel really cool. I found the – so I'm in that city before the Clockwork Mansion. I got through the bottom half of it and moved to the second half. And I think it was in the bottom half that I found, like – a safe, and was like, oh, the find a note that says the safe combination is where it always is. And like, oh, where the fuck do you keep the safe combination? You look through the guy's apartment, and they, oh, you find it. You open the safe, and they're like, there's some money in there, which is like, it's cool to have money. Yeah. But you know, it's cool to have money.
It's cool to have money.
But then there was just like a book about this group called the Regenters.
Yes.
Who are people who were like into the old regent more than the imperial line, and like, yeah, this is that cool world building shit.
Exactly.
This is my shit right here. Like, talk to me more about weird schisms in political dystopic.
Oh, the world building is so good in this. I've been finding it, as well as every like little bonus thing, I've been trying to find every single painting and every single newspaper and book, and it's really good. It's really rich. I feel like rich is the word for this.
Yeah.
It's good to have money and be rich.
And be rich. You know? So I'm now like steps. I could take the car into the Clockwork Mansion. I have the code for that.
Good.
I could do that, but I'm going to keep looking around this zone before I do that.
Probably have another bone charm to find.
Yeah, I do.
You know?
Like one or two more.
Yeah.
What about you, Patrick? You playing anything else right now?
Austin, what the fuck is going on in Final Fantasy?
There's a lot.
I've played 6 hours of that game. I cannot tell you what the plot is.
You're getting married.
I mean, I get that part, but like that's not a plot.
Well,
it's like it's
there's like, so how far in? You're 6 hours in.
I just got the first, I don't know, magic blood sword that like gives you special abilities.
Okay, so now you're
which also has like a bunch of weird implications that like there's a ruling class of weapons that only imbue power to the ruling class of this world. Like,
which speaks to what I was saying on Monday, which is like there's two different fucking worlds in this game. There's a real class distinction.
Like, to the point where like there's a bloodline that is imbued with like weaponized swords.
Yeah.
Like, what is? And then clearly it's only in the game because they're like, yo, we want to give cool-ass swords to the player.
Right.
But then don't think of the implication of, like, a bloodline only getting access to those and what that says about, like, the rest of society in this game. Like,
eugenics is right. That's what they're saying. This bloodline is purer and more magic and holy than the rest. What's wrong? You're a prince, Patrick. You're a prince. Noblesse oblige. Like, you got to do good stuff for people.
I have not played a video game that is more a mess than this game. And I say that in a lot of ways the most positive way possible. I'm really enjoying it. I'm having a ton of fun with obviously 15 so far. I think the combat system is like there's just enough that it's like more engaging than I usually get in with. Like, I'm kind of over a lot of turn-based systems of like the classic JRPG stylings. And this, it gives me just enough to do, but also it's not that demanding. It's not that difficult. Like, if you put in a little bit of effort on doing some side stuff, and it just like there, I saw a line about someone talking about this on Twitter, and it's like, yo, this game was not focus tested at all. Like, this game just is a bunch of stuff, and it's poorly stitched together. It doesn't make any sense. Clearly, like, there were cleavers taken to this game multiple times throughout its development to just ship it out the door. And in a lot of ways, that should make it bad, like, but I don't know. There's something about the chaotic mess that I find really appealing, interesting, and earnest, right? Like, it just feels like they went for it in this game
that's
in a way.
Good word for this. Yeah, because, like, normally something this big, like, whether it's through focus testing or because there's a really, like, single strong, like, set of people who are, like, making the cuts themselves and are saying, no, this has to become less of an RPG and more of a shooter, and it has to be focused, and it has to be, like, you do end up getting something sanded down.
Mm. This game is raw.
It is raw.
Is there a Kojima element to this game? Would you say that?
No, there's not a Kojima element, because if there was, it would be a little bit more, like, Kojima games are all over the place.
Yeah.
but like in a way that I imagine is not focus tested, but is arrived at through very intense meetings.
I see.
Where it's like someone in that room really wants this weird element to be there, and they're going to fucking put it in, period.
Yeah.
The nuclear weapons are going to be – the only way you get that ending is if everybody in the world disarms all their nukes. Like, and everyone else in the room is like, that's a bad idea. Like, Kojima Satan, you can't – everybody has to disarm their nukes. That's the only way you get the ending. And, like, in this, it's not that so much as it's just, like, someone somewhere was like, what if there's another ending where you disarm your nukes? So put that in.
Right, yeah, just throw it in. Just throw it in the pot.
And so there's, like, all these things of just, like, oh, what if there's, like, a really deep, like, almost like a – it reminds me of Monster Strike, which is this mobile game. But it's, like, in the game somewhere. Like, yeah, put it in. Go, yeah, go for it. Whatever you want. Put that in there. Like, what if there was, like, a whole system of weird photos or one of the people in your game, in your crew, was taking photos? All the time, but like actually taking photos. Like, there's clearly some that are pre like set up, but there are a lot that are just like, oh, he stopped in the middle of combat to take a photo. And I'm fighting a big ghost monster or something,
sure.
And he's like, oh, hold up, that looks dope. Snap. And so
awesome.
He's also the worst. Prompto is my least favorite so far.
Is he the chest boy?
No, that's Gladio, who's my most favorite so far.
He's
Gladio,
my favorite too.
Gladio is alright, I'm gonna walk you through.
Okay, please do.
I'm gonna have to walk you through this because there's four boys.
Yes, there's four good boys.
There's four boys. All good. We've been over Noctis. Yes. Noctis is the type of dude who he's the type of dude memes made for
him.
That's the type of dude he
is.
He's just not fly.
No.
Like, he might grow up to be, like, right now he is, again, like, kind of like the disaffected youth who's, like, doesn't understand why.
Shitty prince.
He's like shitty prince who doesn't understand why his dad saved him, which is just like, my dude, your dad loved you. He wanted you to not die. Well, this one bad. There's Ignis, who is, like, you're, like, you know, your mentor and your teacher.
Oh, he's the British guy with glasses. Professorly dude.
I just like naturally pushed my glasses.
You just did. It really happened. It was beautiful.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
He's like that guy. And he's like a little like judgy and like
a little prickly.
He's
a little
like
bit?
More. He's not prickly in a fun way.
I see.
He's like off-brand Solas.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like Solas, but like, what if he didn't have that deep dark mystery around him?
Yeah.
Also,
that's no fun.
The solo story ends up getting really good in the
end. Yeah, it does.
Then there's Prompto, who has a bad backstory.
Wait, is he the Justin Bieber character?
He's the Justin Bieber
character. Okay, good.
I don't
think
he's actually – he's not voiced for Justin Bieber.
No, he's not. I'm just saying.
He's Bieber-esque.
Yeah.
He's Bieber-adjacent.
Bieber-adjacent, okay.
That might be the name of this episode.
Yes, Bieber-adjacent.
Bieber-adjacent.
Correct.
And his backstory from the, like, attached anime is that, like, when he was a little kid, he wanted to be friends with Noctis, the
good.
Prince.
Okay.
But he was, like, chubby. And he was like,
oh,
no one's going to like me if I'm chubby.
My God.
And then he's like,
Bieber.
Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll get hot. And then, like, there isn't a lesson about, like, no, he's going to like you for who you
Accept
are.
Accept yourself.
The lesson is, like, completely change who you are.
Like, get hot. Look like Bieber.
Look like Biebs.
Yeah. Get your Biebs on.
And now everybody likes Prompto. Like, that's the... Okay. That's the...
It's a bad message.
It's a bad... If that thing had been like, I gotta get myself in shape because I want to get in shape.
Right.
Totally
not, I need to be hot so people like me.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's
literally,
not
I need to
great.
Be hot so people like me. And then there's Gladio. And also just like in gameplay, Prompto is the one who's like, I like that he takes pictures. I do like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that he makes the worst jokes. He's just like not funny. He's just like the corny. He's the guy who like hums the Final Fantasy like theme after you succeed. And it's cute once. And
yeah.
then like he does it six times.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, Prompto, you need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And also, your gun doesn't do a lot of damage, homie. Like, I don't know why anybody in this world uses guns. Swords are clearly way better.
His special ability is pretty good, though.
Pierce, or that
yeah.
one?
Yeah. Yeah, because cool. it knocks over a lot of enemies.
It does. There's the other one, though, that I tried using, which is, it's, like, made for grinding, which is, like, he shoots a flare in the air. I think it's made for grinding.
Okay.
He shoots a flare in the air, and just, like, more enemies show up. And the first time I did it, I wasn't sure if it meant that it was going to clump the enemies that were already there together.
Oh.
So in my head, I was like, it's going to clump everybody together.
Make it
and
easy.
Then I'm going to have Gladio, like, get his sword out and just, like, blah, to kill them all. That's the sound swords make in the
blah,
fantasy
blah.
World. Blah. But instead, that didn't happen. And, like, 12 alien giraffes showed up and just fucked up my whole day.
God, No Man's Sky.
No Man, also, yeah. it was No Man's Sky. God. And then there's Gladio.
The best boy.
Who, for me, is like the only one who is like, I'm not here to take any shit. I know what we're doing. I'm here to enjoy myself. I'm going to sit in the back of this car. I'm going to read this book. Tell me when we got to get out of the car and hit something with my sword. I'll do it. I love you all. I just don't have it in me right now to engage with any of you at all.
He sounds amazing.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for him to just give them the, like, I'm going to tell you the fucking, I'm going to tell you how it is.
Good.
Story or like a message at some point.
Oh.
In any case, I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm a little bit past you, Patrick. I got the second sword, which is like the first real dungeon of the game, which was enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm just got into that part of the game. It feels like I'm about to exit whatever the tutorial sort of section is, where they kind of contain you. But yeah, I don't know. I am surprised how much I'm liking the game as much as I am. Like, there's a lot of other things I could be playing, but I mostly just want to play more of that.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to probably play a lot of that this weekend and probably some Last Guardian, which is real. They said
it's a real game.
I literally can't say anything about it, not because I'm not breaking NDA. I wouldn't do that anyway, Sony. Don't sue me. but because I haven't had time to play it.
Yeah.
That's not true. I have had time to play some Final Fantasy and some Dishonored. And I've been playing No Man's Sky again.
Oh, Austin.
I'm sorry.
Have you fought some good space giraffes, at least?
I did. I fought some good
space. All right, that's good.
I found some, like, space lizards who walk around like people.
Oh, that's cool.
And it feels like an affront to people. They're not walking around to, like, people. They're walking around the way a comedian, like a lizard comedian, would walk around like people.
Yeah.
As if he was doing, like, a people walk like this bit. Like, it was, like, the late
80s. Because it is.
So I shot a bunch of them because I needed to get the stuff that
of course
had.
You did.
I needed to get the stuff that they had to give it to my agricultural expert.
That's what they all say, Austin. That's what they all say.
Oh, my God. Here's the actual truth about the existential dread of No Man's Sky. I found a really cool planet. It was like I looked for a planet that I wanted to build a base on. I found one because it was gorgeous. It was all beautiful little plateaus poking up out of the ocean.
It's lovely.
Like, you know, it was like a mix of like almost like fall colored trees with these like little like hyperluminescent caves. And I found a base that I could take over that was in the middle of one of these plateaus in a field of green, and you could see the ocean off in the distance. And there were mountains all up around it. I was like, this is it. This is my home. And I named the planet November Sea. And I named the name of the space like sector, the solar sector, waypoint, so people would know.
Like, this is
it. It's home.
Oh, it's lovely.
And I started building a base, and everything was going well. And then like I left and I came back. When you land, it gives you like the update of like what's up with this planet. And so it's like, oh, is there flora on it? Like, oh, it's lush with flora. How are the sentinels, the robot police who like make sure you don't take too much stuff? Like, they're pretty chill. Like, how is the geographical or the geological makeup? Are there lots of minerals? Like, there are a lot of minerals here. Like, oh, this is the best. I was like, how many animals are here? And I was like, none.
No.
Like, none. And it hit me in a way that wasn't like, I can't get stuff from animals or whatever. It hit me in this like, oh, there's nothing else alive on this planet. There's nothing else with a mind on this planet except us on this shitty little plateau. And suddenly, like, my paradise fell away. Like, even, it's weird. Like, even talking about the notion of being the only living thing on the planet, like, makes my chest constrict a little bit.
It's a terrifying thought.
I didn't expect
that. We're social animals.
Effect. We are.
It's so this terrifying.
Also, where am I going to get, like, the mortinum or whatever it is I need when I kill animals? I need that stuff sometimes.
That's right.
That's my No Man's Sky update. I really want to buy a freighter. I don't have anywhere near enough money to buy a freighter. We'll check back in on that in the future.
It's good to have money.
It's quickly become my, like, chill out before bed game again.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Like, 30 minutes of that is totally scratching the itch right now. The only other little thing I wanted to mention was, like, a really fucking cool moment in Mafia 3. I'm gonna give a little Mafia 3 spoiler. I'm going to give a little Mafia 3 spoiler. Okay. I'm going to give a late game mission spoiler here. It's not like the end of the game. It's not a big plot heavy thing, but it's just like it was this amazing moment that was one of those things that again made me happy that at least it took place in an open world, even if it could have been cut down a lot, which was – so I've mentioned before that there's this really great B plot running through the game of this kind of stand your ground case where this white dude shoots two black guys who go up to his house to ask for help with their car, which obviously mirrors lots of real cases.
Yeah.
And he shoots them and kills them, and he's on trial for it. And you end up needing your A plot intersects with that because that judge is helping the mafia there set up their casino thing. Or it's not, he's like not actually helping, but like they need his help basically. And he's willing to help. And so you intercede and are going to kill him because this is like that revenge story. And the only time he's under police protection all the time. The only time that he isn't under police protection, he's under police protection because there's all these protests about that case.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you arrive at the courthouse, it's just, like, surrounded by protesters. And then, like, the police kind of caravan comes out and, like, kind of, like, they escort him out of the thing. And, like, he gets into his car. And then the police, like, can drive him away in this, like, three-car escort. And then you learn, like, oh, he's going to stop and go do some stuff on the side, obviously, and, like, slip away from the police. And I'm, like, following him this whole time. And Paint It Black is on the car. Oh, and it's not like the chorus of Paint It Black. I'm just like doing this slow tailing during the last like minute of Paint It Black, which is just like the riff repeating over and over again. And my idea is like, oh, I'm not going to touch this. I'm going to call in Vito's hitmen to hit this dude in while he's like down some weird alleyway. And so he goes down the side alleyway. He gets like set up. He's like trying to buy some drugs on the side. Of course, welcome to corrupt politicians, I guess. And I call in the hitmen, but they come in from an alleyway I don't see. And so that means – I thought they'd come in from the front and block him off, but they don't. So he just like speeds away.
Oh, no.
We chase after him. They end up shooting out one of his tires or something because the car is like all fucked up. I end up chasing him. The Paint It Black is going. I slam into the back of the car. He spins out. The two guards who are with him get out. I get out with him. The hitmen kill his two guards, and so no one has looked at me yet. And at this point, he is just, like, fast walking away. He's, like, the picture. When I said, like, a southern gentleman lawyer, he's that guy.
Yep.
And he's just, like, stumbling away and, like, looking back over his shoulder as, like, music is blaring out of the cars. And I'm, like, just slow walking after him.
Oh, man.
And just, like, eventually I just find him in an alley or in a parking lot to the like side of a bunch of buildings, and he just like goes into the corner and waits, and then the other hitmen walk up behind me finally after they're done with the other guys and just like shoot him to death in the corner. I don't raise a finger, I don't touch a gun, and it was just one of these like, yo, I would watch that movie moments. It only worked because there was this great geography and the soundtrack and all that, and it was just like such a good moment.
Oh,
and like it was just as high as any of the set pieces in that game for me, and it mostly happened outside of the set piece, like kind of orchestration. So, nice work on that, Hangar 13.
Yeah.
Hangar 13. I always say Hangar 18, but Hangar 13.
Hangar 13.
Thank you so much for that, Hangar 13.
Oh, it's beautiful.
We have like 5 minutes.
And we have time for a quick question.
A quick dip.
An easy one. Dip
in
our toe.
I'm gonna dip it in.
It's not. Are you?
To dip it. Right into the question bucket. Okay.
Oh, God. Patrick's face right now.
I wish we had podcast art.
I do, too.
I wish we had podcast art.
I really do.
It's really good. It's really good. Let's see. Here we go. This comes in from Gabe from Peru.
Oh, cool.
What up, Gabe?
What's good, Gabe? I've been thinking a lot about user interface in games lately. I think that in modern games, there can often be a conflict between the actual 3D space of the game and what the often exaggerated amount of UI elements do to the player. For instance, mini-maps or radars. I personally am really annoyed by how commonplace these have become. Open-world games like GTA and Mafia and even The Witcher 3 have these, and I feel that they undermine their own immense amount of work that went into crafting these increasingly detailed, gorgeous worlds and cities. The player will always naturally try to optimize how they play and figure out the best way to do things, in this case with navigation and exploration. Obviously, the most effective way to find things in these games is by looking at the damn mini-map, where you can usually instantly see the icon for what you're looking for, be it an item, an NPC, or an arrow pointing to an objective. That need to optimize is reinforced by the rhythm at which these games tend to provide information and objectives to the player. You get updates and quest notifications in a big UI spot on the screen, which makes us feel the need to check all those pending objectives off the list. And so Gabe wants to know, basically, like, hey, is it possible, isn't there an avenue of game development to try to get rid of as much UI and HUD as possible and instead to come up with better ways to convey information to the player without resorting to these out-of-space elements, which are arguably archaic?
Go ahead, Patrick.
I was gonna say we talked a lot about Dishonored, but I think Dishonored's a game that like does a really fantastic job of isolating different elements that would otherwise be on a mini map. So, for example, there's a power that allows you to see both where guards are going to walk to, have walked from, and you can see their cone of vision. That's stuff that would often be on a minimap, like in a Metal Gear game. In order to find the hidden objects throughout the game, you have to swap over to a different item, which then overlays some information on the screen that contextualizes it in the world without it putting it on a minimap. That's stuff that could have been in... Like, it's really easy to imagine Dishonored with a minimap, and instead they found creative solutions... for the player to get access to that information without having it crowd up, you know, a fourth of or, you know, an eighth of the real estate of the screen. Like, I wish games found better ways to communicate that information on the screen in an optional way that makes it useful. Like even like Final Fantasy, right? Like, I'm constantly staring at that mini map to see, like, where is the mining stuff? Like, where is the, you know, where are these different objects? But that stuff could be on the screen and just accessible by tapping R1, like, pretty easily. But instead, I think a lot of this minimap stuff is just, it's legacy. Like, people just, that's how we convey information.
That's what we make.
Totally. And so I think minimap is less, it's just an easy function rather than, like, the most elegant way of communicating that information. And I do think more games should try harder at finding alternate methods of getting that same information that allows you to focus more on the game rather than staring at a mini map to make sure you're headed in the right direction, which is annoying.
So I definitely feel like this is one of those things that's like what I want to happen is for when mini maps are invoked and used to be a conscious choice instead of like the default.
Yeah.
Where like there are totally games where the mini map results in a sort of a speed of play and an abstraction of what you're doing that is intentional.
Yeah.
Or where the developer changes it up depending on things. Right. So like think about like Halo multiplayer. There are specific Halo multiplayer modes that don't have the radar anymore, and suddenly that feels completely different. And both of those game modes are fun, but for different reasons. And so like in general, I think games can do that. Like I obviously. Surprise, I'm a big Far Cry 2 fan again. Yep. Far Cry 2's map is literally a map you hold up and look at, and then you have to put it away when you're not looking at it. I love that system. I don't know that it fits every game.
They did that in Firewatch too, I think.
They did.
Actually.
They totally did.
Yeah, which is really cool. I'm with both of you. I think intentionality here is the most important thing. Like, if you have a map, make it intentional. I think Alien Isolation did a good job with this, especially with sort of the tracker. You had to make a very conscious choice to use the tracker and always constantly be putting it away because it made noise. And like that was actually a big part of the fiction of the game.
Right.
So I really like that. And also, I think Dishonored is another good example. So
like the map in Dishonored is straight up just like in the menu, and it doesn't have.
It's almost useless.
It's
just like a physical map that you get from looking at a location that gave you the map, basically.
I spent a lot of time trying to find a bone charm in the hospital because it was like underneath some stairs or something. I was like, I'm looking at these maps. How do I get into the basement?
I died a few times looking for that one, too.
I didn't find it. I eventually just moved on. But like, I liked that part of the play. That is part of the play. So, I think if you're intentional about it and like don't just default to it, and then like if you really want to get rid of it, find a cool way to get rid of it. There are definitely ways. The implementation might be rocket science, and making it right might be really tough. But like the conceptualization, there's a bunch of avenues that you could conceive of going.
There's a VR game called Dread Halls, which was an early demo for the Oculus that's since been kind of cleaned up, and there's sort of a proper version on the Oculus store. But this is a game. It's a horror game in which you are trying to just get to the exit, and you can fumble your way there. But it's more useful to look at a map that gets filled in as you explore rooms, and it highlights, you know, special objects you can find and rooms you've already been to, so you can find your way to the end. But in order to look at the map, you have to it's always in your hands, but you have to point your head down. And the game, the game tracks when your head goes down and then shifts the creatures that are milling about in the environment based on if you're going down. So the game knows you're looking away and then shuffles the pieces that it's using to mess with you as a result of you referencing the map. So the map becomes a risk reward. It's like you can look at the map and maybe you know where to go, but then there might be like a crazy, you know, creature screaming at you around the corner the moment you put your head up. And so, it creates this really exciting tension over something that is otherwise incredibly mundane in other games that I think speaks to this idea of like rethinking what the map does, what its function is, and how can you make that a more interesting part of the gameplay.
Totally. Like, I basically think that everybody should have that thought of like what can we do with our map to make it intrinsic to the gameplay instead of supplementary? And is that something we're interested in doing?
Yeah.
I would be so happy if Final Fantasy 15 just had a
Skyrim a roadmap
style.
Or something?
Well, that would be so cool. Or the other way of just like, give me the sky, get out of my way, give me the Skyrim style compass that marks things. It's at the top of the screen. I don't need to, or the Dishonored Bone Charm style thing of just like, let me hit a button and see what's around me. Awesome. Either one of those would be totally good. So that's I think our time for the week is Friday.
For this week.
We did it. We got to Friday.
We made it.
It's been a messy week.
This
week's been okay, but it's been messy. It's felt like, I think it's because it was a holiday weekend the week before, and so it's just like, everything's just all over the place, but we're just about there. A couple
getting
more
there.
Weeks. We'll do some end of the year stuff. We're going to be doing some more streaming. Next Wednesday, for sure, we'll be streaming. Mike out in the UK is doing a special stream from the UK, from like a bar. In a bar?
Yeah.
There's a bar that has a streaming setup. Maybe that's actually the stream that's going to happen next Wednesday.
That might be what it is, because it's 7 London time, is what?
I don't know when that is.
1 for us? 1 p.m.?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Something like that? Is there a 6-hour difference?
You're making that up. You don't know.
It's a 5-hour difference. It's a 5-hour
difference. So like 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. That's when we would
That's actually perfect.
Anyway, so look out for that. And then we're going to try, I think, on Monday.
Yeah.
To make this a stream.
So you can see our amazing faces.
It means we'll have to dress as well as Patrick is right now.
I know. We're we got to step it up.
Yeah,
he has
a nice sweater on.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a good look.
It's nice.
Thank you so much for joining us, as always. And shout out to Tim Barnes, our audio engineer.
Yeah,
Tim. Keeping it locked down right there. He's doing a little dance.
Yeah, Tim's doing a dance. It's great.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, everyone out there in the world. Thank you, Bowen, for letting us use his song, Miss You. I'm going to set up a forward. You're going to be able to go to waypoint.zone/BOEN.
Yeah.
Just get to where that song is. That's what I'm going to do.
So that's a good
way
idea.
I can stop stumbling over the shout-out to him at the end of every episode. I think that's about it. Anybody else have anything this weekend? Anything going on? Anything people should look for?
Play some games.
Go play some games. I'm going to play some Final Fantasy. We'll see how that goes. Catch you on Monday. I love you all. Peace.